Okay, good morning. Today's daf is Sota Daf Lamed Hey. Today we're going to continue with the discussion of the Meraglim. We began the discussion yesterday really on a tangent. We were talking about how heavy the stones were that Klal Yisrael lifted up from the Yarden as they were crossing the Yarden, and we said, we extrapolated, well, if the stones were 40 saw, then the cluster of grapes that Klal Yisrael picked up, that the Meraglim picked up, rather, when they were going on their tour of Eretz Yisrael, must have been 960 saw. We started talking a little bit about the Meraglim, how they were evil to their core, how Kalev and Yeshua managed to escape from the Eitz of the Meraglim. So today we're going to pick up with a further discussion of the Meraglim. We're going to get into a little bit of the back and forth that Klal Yisrael and then Kalev and Yeshua had with the Meraglim, and the Gemara then is going to pick up where it left off when it went off on this tangent to discuss the Meraglim, which is more about the story of the crossing of the Yarden. In connection with that, the Gemara is going to discuss how it should have been obvious that from the story of the crossing of the Yarden that the Aron has the miraculous ability to transport itself without actually being carried. And in that vein, the Gemara is going to discuss how Uzzah, who lived in the time of David HaMelech, was punished for touching the Aron, for thinking that it needed assistance in order to be carried. And then the Gemara is going to continue its discussion of the crossing of the Yarden by focusing a little bit on Amud Beis about the stones that the Bnei Yisrael picked up from in the middle of the Yarden and then erected on the other side of the Yarden in Eretz Yisrael. We saw already in the Mishnah, we alluded to the fact that the Klal Yisrael wrote the Torah on these stones in 70 languages, and the Gemara is going to discuss, if you read the Psukim there in Parshas Kisavo, it looks like there were stones, that they wrote something, and then they covered the stones with limestone. So the Gemara is going to discuss whether they would cover the stone with lime before they wrote on the stone, or after they wrote on the stone, and the Gemara is going to debate a back and forth on that topic. So we'll pick up from the last line on Lamed Daled Amud Beis. It says in the middle of the line, Vayeshuvu Mitur Aretz, that the Meraglim returned from their tour of the of Eretz Yisrael. And it says Vayelchu Vayavo. It says in the pasuk Vayelchu Vayavo. So Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So Mekish Halicha Lebia. So the pasuk compares the Halicha of the Meraglim to the return of the Meraglim. So Ma Bia Beitzara. Just like when they were coming back from Eretz Yisrael to report to Klal Yisrael, they had an Eitzara. They were coming back Beitzara with evil intentions. Af Halicha Beitzara. Also upon their departure, they had bad intentions. The Marsha explains that when the Meraglim were selected, initially upon their selection, they were actually tzaddikim. How do we know? Because the Pasuk refers to them as Anoshim. And Rashi Yisrael Hema, and Rashi over there on the Pasuk says that at first when they were chosen, they were Anoshim. They were great men. It was only after that they became corrupted. So what does it mean that when they left, they were already corrupt in the Gemara over here? So says the Marsha, yes, when they were chosen, they were great. However, in between the time that they were chosen and the time that they embarked on their journey to Eretz Yisrael, they were already Risham. Why? So the Marsha says this works on the principle of Shlucho Shel Adam Kamoso, that the Bnei Yisrael had bad intentions when the Meraglim were sent to Eretz Yisrael. And because the Meraglim were the Shluchim of the Bnei Yisrael in going and scouting out the land, it was impossible for them to have anything other than bad intention, because Shlucho Shel Adam Kamoso. At the time they were chosen, they were great people. But once they were already in the mode of embarking on their mission, then you have to say that they were Risham, because Shlucho Shel Adam Kamoso, their mission was basically doomed to failure unto Rishus, because they represented Klal Yisrael, who themselves had very evil intentions. So it says the Gemara Vayter, three lines down from the top, Vayisapru Lo, Vayom Rubanu. So V'chsiv Efeski Azaam. So Amar Rav Yochanan. So Simon Emes Levado and Levaya. So Mishum Rav Meir. So says Rav Yochanan, name Rav Meir. Kol Lashon Hara Sheim Bo Davar Emes Betchilaso. Any Lashon Hara that doesn't have a little kernel of truth in the beginning, Emes Kaim Besofo, is not going to be able to be Mekayim at the end. In other words, if you tell bold lies that are out-and-out lies and have no kernel of truth at all, then you're going to be exposed as a liar. So what you should do is even when you want to say some Lashon Hara, when you want to tell lies about something, you have to start with a little bit of a truth to establish a little bit of credibility. And so the Meraglim, when they came back and they gave the report of Eretz Yisrael, they also started with the truth. They said that Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz of Ascholda V'dvash, and only after they spoke about how bountiful the land is, did they start bad-mouthing the land and say Eretz Ocheles Yoshvea and this and that, and we were like grasshoppers, and then they said all this other bad lashon hara about Eretz Yisrael. But at the very beginning, at the outset, they did say a couple of statements of truth, a couple of truthful statements about Eretz Yisrael. So says the Gemara, Vayas Kalev Esa'am, and Kalev quieted the people. So what did he Vayas Kalev Am El Moshe, and Kalev quieted the people with regard to Moshe. So Rashi explains that what this means is vayas means shiskan, that he quieted them, and El Moshe, it means bedvarim shehischil ledaber b'Moshe, that he started talking about Moshe. Vayusvurin shebignuso rotzel lesaper. Klal Yisrael thought that when Kalev quieted everybody down and said, "Hey, everybody, listen up, listen to this about Moshe Rabbeinu," the Bnei Yisrael thought that Kalev was going to badmouth and he was going to defame Moshe Rabbeinu, just like the Meraglim were defaming Eretz Yisrael. So the Bnei Yisrael rather quieted down. They gave Kalev their full attention. And then only after Kalev started speaking did it become apparent that he was actually praising Moshe Rabbeinu and not defaming Moshe Rabbeinu. So says the Gemara, so what did he do? So Amar Rava, she'esisan bedvarim, that he enticed them with words. That Pasach Yeshua de Kamishtoi, so Yeshua was about to speak and retort to the Meraglim. So Amrilei, they said to him, Din Rosh Ketiyah Yemalel, this person of a severed head is going to praise Moshe Rabbeinu, is going to praise Eretz Yisrael. So what does this mean, Rosh Ketiyah? So Rashi explains that they said that Yeshua was a Rosh Ketiyah, he was a cut-off head, because Yeshua had no children to inherit the land. And so what the Bnei Yisrael were saying is that all of this is nogea to us. Eretz Yisrael, whether we're going to be able to inherit Eretz Yisrael, is nogea lamaisa for us. Why? Because we have children who are going to inherit us, and we want to make sure that our children are inheriting us and inheriting land in a place where they could live. That's sustainable. Yeshua doesn't have any offspring. So if Yeshua doesn't have any offspring, so he's not a nogea b'davar. So it doesn't matter what's going to be in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't care. He's alive, but he doesn't have to worry about providing a safe environment for his children, and therefore don't listen to him. The Yin Yaakov explains, interesting, that Rosh Ketiyah is a reference to the Yud that was placed at the beginning of Yeshua's name. So we saw yesterday in the Gemara that the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu placed a Yud in the beginning of Yeshua's name, his name had been Hoshea, then his name became Yeshua, was because Yeshua means Ka Yoshiacha Miatzas Meraglim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect you from the Esav and the Meraglim. But the Yin Yaakov says, interesting, Yud is what's known as a masculine letter and not as a feminine letter. And so long as somebody had that Yud in their name, they were unable to have children. Where was the Yud taken from? The Yud was taken from the name of Sarah, whose name had been Sarai, and then put at the beginning of Yeshua's name. So long as Sarai's name was Sarai, she wasn't able to have children. When the Yud was taken from her, she became Sarah, she was able to have children. When the Yud was put at the beginning of Yeshua's name, that inability to have children was transferred to Yeshua. So that's what the Yin Yaakov says. That's why he was referred to as Rosh Ketiyah. He's a person of severed head, because everybody knew not only did he not have kids, but he could not have kids so long as this Yud was placed at the beginning of his name. So Amar, so Kalev, so back in the Gemara, so Kalev said to himself, Imash de'ina, Amri be milsa v'chasmin be. So he said, look, if I come outright and directly start to defend Moshe Rabbeinu, and if I directly start to defend Eretz Yisrael, then everybody's going to quiet me the same way they quieted Yeshua. So I have to go about this in a more devious way. So what did he do? So Amar Len, so he said to Klal Yisrael, V'chizu b'vado solana ben Avram, is this the only thing that Moshe Rabbeinu did to us? And they thought, Sasavri Bignuse Kamishtoi, they thought that he was going to say more bad things about Moshe Rabbeinu. So that got their attention. Ishtiku, so they turned quiet. So Amar Lu, but then Kalev tricked them, because Amar Lu, then Kalev started praising Moshe Rabbeinu. Hosdiana mi Mitzrayim, that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, is this the only thing that Moshe Rabbeinu HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Klal Yisrael? took us out of Mitzrayim, Karalano Sayam, Bechilano Saman, all of these miracles. So Im Yomar Asu Sulamos Valul Rakiel Lishmalo. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Moshe Rabbeinu, if Moshe Rabbeinu said, look, God told me that you should build ladders and climb all the way up to the heavens, would we not listen to him? Alonala Viarashnuosa. So why is this any different? In other words, we had a whole series of miraculous events occur to us since we left Eretz Yisrael. The fact that we left Eretz Yisrael was a miracle. The fact that the Yom Suf split for us was a miracle. The fact that we got Manv all these years for all this time was a miracle. So no matter what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would tell us through his Shaliach Moshe Rabbeinu, we would have to listen to him, even if he told us to build Sulamos all the way up to Shemayim. So now that he's telling us to go to Eretz Yisrael, so let's go up and let's go conquer Eretz Yisrael. So says the Gemara Vayter, now a different topic. And the people who were with him said, no, lo nuchal, we're not going to be able to go up. So Amar Rav Chanina bar Papa, Davar Gadol Dibru Meraglim Bosasha. That the Meraglim spoke a great, or we'll see in a second, not so great thing at that time. Ki chazak hu mimenu, it says ki chazak, that the inhabitants are stronger than us. But al tikru mimenu ela mimenu. In other words, don't read that the inhabitants are stronger than us. Rather, the inhabitants are stronger than he. Mimenu in Hebrew could be either stronger than we, mimenu, than we, or than he. So don't read that the inhabitants are stronger than us, i.e. B'nai Yisrael. Read that the inhabitants are stronger than he, i.e. the inhabitants are stronger than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kaviyachol afilu balabayis en yachol lahotzi kelov misham. In other words, even the balabayis is not able to clear the house of its kelim. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is powerless to clear Eretz Yisrael of its current inhabitants, because the current inhabitants are simply too strong even for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to contend with. So Eretz Ocheles Yoshveahi, they also said about Eretz Yisrael that it's Ocheles Yoshveah, that it eats its inhabitants. So what does that mean? So Darash Rava, Samar HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ani Chashavti Letova, I intended for their benefit, for the benefit of the Meraglim, v'heim chashfu l'ra, but the Meraglim misconstrued this and took this as a bad thing. What does this mean? So ani chashavti l'tova, I had intended for the benefit of the Meraglim, to kol hecha d'matu meis chashiva d'tu, because everywhere where they went, yeah, would have chashiva people in the community dying, ki eche d'nitradu v'lo lishalu abasrayu, so that the inhabitants of the land should be busy with the funeral arrangements, and so that they shouldn't be looking after the Meraglim, they shouldn't be paying attention to the Meraglim. Vika Damri, and others say it wasn't simply Choshava people in Eretz Yisrael who died, but rather it was Eov Nachnafshe, that Eov died at that time, Vatridu Kuliyama Bespeda, and everybody over throughout the entire world was busy being Maspid Eov. So this Mandi Amar obviously holds that Eov lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's a big machlokas in, I think it's in Baba Basra, when exactly Eov lived. Some say that he never really lived, he's just a metaphor. Others say he lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. They're all different machlokas as to when he lived. So this Mandi Amar holds that he lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it fits with what it says in the pasuk of Sart Silam Me'aleim, when Yeshua and Kalev say that their Tzilam, their protector, which Rashi on the Chumash interprets as Eov, died, and therefore he's no longer around, he's no longer there to protect them, therefore we can go and we can conquer Eretz Yisrael. But in any event, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, look, I did them a favor by causing everybody to die, or by causing Eov to die. This caused people to be torayed in the burial and in hesped, and because they were so busy being maspid the mace, they weren't able to pay attention to the Meraglim and to go run after the Meraglim. But heim chashvu l'ra, they misinterpreted this to the bad. They view this as a bad thing. So eretz ocheles yoshveahi. So they said, oh, everybody's being osek in hesped, everybody's being osek in burial. It must be that this is a land that eats, that literally eats its inhabitants. another thing that the Meraglim said is that we felt like we were grasshoppers in their eyes. Some Rav Misharsha, Meraglim Shakru Havi. The Meraglim were simply lying. Because think about it. Bishlamanhi Beinenu Kacha Gavim. If you want to say that we felt like grasshoppers to them, that we felt like grasshoppers, okay, Lachai. So they know how they feel. So they could say that it's as if we were like grasshoppers. However, Ela Vachina Yinu Beinayim. However, that we were like grasshoppers to them. So Minavi Yadeh. How do we know that? So they were simply lying. They have no way to know that the people, that the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael view the Meraglim like grasshoppers. Says the Gemara of Elohi, but that's not entirely accurate. They could have known. Why? Ki'avi Mavri Avele Tusei Arze, because when they were serving the Sudas Avra, when they were serving the mourner's meal underneath a cedar tree, Havi Mavri V'kichazinan Salku Yosvi Bilane, and when they were sitting in the tree, when the Meraglim were sitting in the tree, Shamei Dekamri Kachazina Inchi Dedami Lekamtsi Bilane, that they heard the people who were having the Sudas Avra saying to their friends, oh, there are men that look like grasshoppers sitting in the tree. So they overheard this conversation. So when they said that we appeared like grasshoppers rather to them, they weren't simply speculating, they weren't simply lying. This is something that they overheard. So they knew that they looked like grasshoppers to the inhabitants of the land. It says in Gemara Vayter, Vatisa Kala Eda, Vayitnu as kolam vayivku, and everybody raised up their voice and they started crying. So Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Osu Ayom Erev Tisha B'Av Haya. That day was Erev Tisha B'Av, and Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hein Bachu B'Chia Shalchinam V'Ani Ekva Lahem B'Chia L'Doros. They cried an empty cry, a cry for naught, and I will establish on this day for them a B'Chia, crying, a lamentation for generations. Vayomru Kol Eida, and everybody assembled, said, Lirgam Osam B'Avonim. They wanted to stone Yehoshua and Kalev with stones. Uchsiv V'Chod Hashem Nira B'Oel. And it also says that the Shechina was found at the Ol Moed. So Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Malamed Shenatlu Avanim Vezorkun Klapei Mala. In other words, not only did they want to stone Yehoshua and Kalev, they wanted to stone the Shechina. They wanted to stone the Anane Yakovod, and basically they wanted to throw stones at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bnei Yisrael at this time. They were so depraved. They wanted to throw stones at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayamusu Ha'Anashim Motzei Diba Sa'aretz Ra B'Magefa, and the people who spoke ill of Eretz Yisrael died in a plague. Some of Shimon ben Loke Shemesu Misa Mishuna. They died a very strange and terrible death. What's this terrible death? Some of Chanina bar Papa Derash Rav Shila Ishkvar Tamrata. So Rav Shila darshans Malameh Shenis Tarvev Lashonam V'Nafal Al Tiburam, that their tongues extended and dropped down all the way to their navel, to their belly button. Vayutalam Yotzos Milshonam, and maggots exited from their tongues, v'nechnasos b'tiburam, and started going into their navel, umitiburam, and exited their navel, v'nechnasos bilshonam, and started entering their tongue. So that's pretty gross. So their tongue got pretty long and hung all the way down to their belly button, and then they had maggots walking back and forth. What's the symbolism here? So the Maral explains that a person's creation stems from the navel. That's where the umbilical cord is. That's the source of connection between a baby and his or her mother. So the navel represents the beginning of creation, and the tongue represents the completion of creation. Why? Because the tongue is what gives man the power of speech, and the power of speech is what separates man from an animal. So the tongue is what really caps the completion and the creation of man as a separate creature, and as somebody who is more developed and somebody who is higher up in the hierarchy of creation than an animal. So the maggots also represent decay. We know that maggots are usually found near or in a dead body, and the maggots symbolize the maggots exiting the navel, exiting the tongue and going into the navel, and exiting the navel and going into the tongue symbolize that the meraglim were decayed, they were depraved, they were evil from their very essence, from the beginning all the way until the end, that they were simply depraved through and through. The Ben Yehuda says that this punishment is fitting because the maggot exited their tongue, they spoke Lashon Hara, which you speak with your tongue, and they enter the navel because it says in the Gemara elsewhere that Eretz Yisrael is the navel, Eretz Yisrael is the center of the entire world. So the maggot exited the tongue and entered the navel because they were speaking Lashon Hara about the place which is considered to be the navel of the entire world. So that's what Rav Shila said. That was a very strange death. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak disagrees. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar Ba'askara Mesu, that they died with strangulation. So why is Askara appropriate? So the Gemara Shabbos says that Askara is a punishment for Lashon Hara. The Maral explains that the reason that it's a punishment for Lashon Hara is because Askara strangulates you. It closes off all of the organs that are used for speech. And therefore the Meraglim, who spoke Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, they died with Askara, which was a very fitting death for them. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter, we're right above the last, the wide lines, towards the bottom of Lamed Hayam and Aleph. So says the Gemara to two dots. V'kivon shaldo achron shabi Yisrael mene Yardain, when the last among Klal Yisrael went up from the Yardain, now on the other side into Eretz Yisrael, chazru mayim limkoman, then the waters continued flowing again in its ordinary course. Shenemar, as it says, v'yabalos hakohen emelsayor and bris Hashem mitoch haYardain, that it was when the Kohanim stepped out of the Yardain, notku kapos ragli Kohanim ala charava, that the Kohanim stepped back, in other words, on the other side of the Yardain, opposite Eretz Yisrael, v'yeshuva mea Yardain limkoman. And then the Yardain continued flowing again, v'yelchu ketmol shalshon, al kol gedosav. And the Yardain started flowing again with its usual might, with its usual speed. So, just to paint the picture, again, what we had said, we had begun this yesterday, we had said that the Kohanim carrying the Aron went into the Yardain. As soon as the Kohanim put their foot into the Yardain, the water stopped flowing. It stopped flowing downstream. It started flowing up and up until a height of either 12 mil or 300 mil. We saw Machlokas yesterday. And then the members of Klal Yisrael crossed the Yardain into Eretz Yisrael, and they crossed either in the formation of their encampment or Zeh, or one by one. We saw another Machlokas yesterday. And then when the last member of Klal Yisrael exited the Yardain on the Eretz Yisrael side, it sounds like the Kohanim stepped back from where they had stepped initially. They stepped back onto the Jordan side of the Yardain, and then the water started flowing again. So what happened now is that you have everybody in Klal Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael, and you have the Kohanim holding the Aron who are on the other side of the Yardain. So how did they get to Eretz Yisrael? So Nimsa says the Gemara, Ar Menosa v'Kohanim mitzad echad, v'Yisrael mitzad echad. So what happened was that the Kohanim were on one side of the Yardain, and the Bnei Yisrael were on the other side of the Yardain. So how did the Aron get to the other side of the Yardain? How did the Aron get to Eretz Yisrael? So says the Gemara, Sanasa Aron es Nosav, because the Aron just miraculously floated across the Yardain and carried the people who were supposed to be carrying the Aron, v'yavar, and across the Yardain, Shenemar, as it says, v'yikasher tam kala am la'avar, that it was when the nation completed crossing the Yardain, v'yavar Aron Hashem v'akonim lefnei ha'am. And the Aron was Yavar, Vayavar Aron, and the Aron basically carried the people who were carrying it across the Jordan River. The Aldavar Zen and Ashuza, and on this thing Uzzah was punished. Again, Uzzah lived in the time of David HaMelech, and the Gemara now is going to talk about a story that happened when the Aron was transported after the Plishtim conquered it from Kiryas Yarim to Yerushalayim during the time of David. And on this, Uzzah was punished. Why? Shenemar, Vayavo ad Goren Kidon, and they came to Goren Kidon, Vayishlach Uzzah Yado Lechoz Es Aron. The Aron was being transported on a wagon, and the wagon was very shaky, and the Aron was bouncing around. Now Uzzah thought that the Aron was bouncing around, that there was a danger that the Aron might fall off the wagon. So he stuck his hand out to brace the Aron, to hold the Aron, and Uzzah was killed. Uzzah was a Yisrael, and we know that only Kohanim or Levim are allowed to touch not only the Aron itself, but even the Badim, even the poles of the Aron. Only Kohanim and Levim are allowed to touch. Yisrael is not allowed to touch even the poles, Kal v'chomer, the actual Aron. So, and Uzzah reached out to touch the Aron, and that's why he died. So, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Uzzah, what are you doing? No sub, no say. Atzma lo kol shkein. The Aron transports even those who transport it. In other words, the Aron had the capacity to float across the Yarden. So the Aron is not going to fall down. It can transport itself. If it can transport those who usually carry it, certainly it's going to stay upright on the wagon and it's not going to fall down. So the Mefarshim debate whether the Aron would regularly transport those who were supposed to transport it, sort of as a common occurrence, like did it always float? And yeah, say if it always floated, so I understand why Uzzah should have known better, because Uzzah, what are you doing? The Aron always floats. And now, you know, so it's bouncing around in the wagon, don't worry, it's not going to fall down because the Aron always floats. Or did it only float at the time that it crossed the Jordan River? So if it floated only at the time that it crossed the Jordan River, it's a little bit more difficult to understand why Uzzah was punished. But those Mefarshim will have to explain that Uzzah was still punished because even though it only floated once in history, it was a very, very it was a very, very important time. It was a landmark time, and it was very well known. It was renowned. So everybody knew about the nace of the Aron crossing the Jordan River, and therefore Uzzah should have remembered that Maisa. And he should have known that that there was no way that the Aron would actually fall. And it says, "Vayicharaf Hashem beUzzah." Kadosh Baruch Hu got angry at Uzzah. Vayakeyu Sham Alashul, and the Alashal, and he smote him right there. So Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Chanamar Aliske Shalu on the error that he made. Because his error was touching the Aron. Again, he was a Yisrael, and he was forbidden from touching the Aron. Because he defecated in front of the Aron. So what does it mean? Uzzah defecated in front of the Aron. The guy was such a Rasha, he was disrespecting the Aron like that. So the Mefarshim explained, no, he certainly didn't defecate right before the Aron. What it means is he defecated on the other side of a mechitza, but he should have turned his body so that he wasn't facing the Aron. But he was facing the Aron, and that itself was a sign of disrespect. Vayama sham im Aron Elokim, and Uzzah died right over there. Some Rav Yochanan, Uzzah bo li Olam Haba. From here we learn that Uzzah went to Olam Haba. Why? Shenemar im Aron Elokim, because it says that he died with the Aron Elokim. Ma Aron li Olam, just like the Aron lasts forever. The Olam Kayam af Uzzah ba li Olam Haba. Also, Uzzah will go right to Olam Haba. Vayichar le David al asher paratz Hashem paratz be Uzzah, and David was anguished on what Hashem did to Uzzah. So, and you'll notice that I translated the word vayichar as anguish. You'll see why in a second. So, Amar Rav Elazar, shenishtanu panav kecharara, that his face turned dark like a biscuit, basically. He was so anguished over the death of Uzzah. So says the Gemara, why are you translating vayichar means as anguish? Vayichar usually means that he got angry. Elameyata kol eicha dechziv vayichar hachanami. Every time it says vayichar, should we interpret this to mean anguish and not angry? I thought it always means angry. It says hasam chziv af, hacha lo chziv af. Usually when vayichar means angry, it says vayichar af. Charon af is a lashon of anger. Vayichar, the word vayichar without the word af, that doesn't mean anger, that means anguish. David was anguished because he felt that he was to blame for Uzzah's death, because it was David who had the idea of transporting the Aron on a wagon instead of people actually holding the Aron with the Badim, instead of having Kohanim or Levim hold the Aron. And because David had the idea to put the Aron on a wagon, that's why it was shaky, and that's why Uzzah had to touch it, and that's why he got punished. That's why he got killed. So Darash Rava, so Mneiman Enash David, why was David punished? And the punishment of David was that David made the mistake of having the Aron be transported by these wagons, which then led to Uzzah's death ultimately. So why was he punished? Mnei shakara l'divrei Torah zmiros, because David called the divrei Torah zmiros. Shenemar zmiros hayali chukecha beis migurai. The Torah was to me like zmiros in my house of fear, said David Amelech in Sefer Tehillim. So Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to David, Divrei Torah, Shekasa Behem, Hatif Einecha Bo Ve'einenu. Divrei Torah, regarding which it said that if you divert your eyes from them for a moment, then they're no longer there. In other words, you have to have such focus and such concentration when you learn Torah. Ata Koriosam Zmiros, you're calling them Zmiros, like stomp songs that a person just sings by rote? It's disrespectful. I'm going to see to it that you are going to make a mistake in something that even Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban, even children know. And it says in the pasuk, it says in the Chumash, Livnei Koslo Lo Nosan, that to the Bnei Kos, they were not given agolos, they were not given wagons. Ki avodas hakodesh, because they had an avodas hakodesh, the Bnei Kos had to carry the aron, and they had to carry the aron physically, manually, holding the aron on poles. That's why they didn't get wagons, because they didn't need wagons, because the aron was never transported with wagons. And you, the iu aseh ba'galta, and you had transported the aron on a wagon. So you made this mistake on something that nobody makes a mistake about, that nobody should make a mistake about, because it's in Mefurish, in Chumash, that the aron was not transported on. That was not transported on wagons. So this, of course, was Mida Keneged Mida, because learning Torah like it's a song, just like by rote, without concentration, causes it to be forgotten. David HaMelech, who compared Torah to Zmiros, therefore he forgot something that was written Mefurish in Chumash about the fact that the Aron was not supposed to be transported on a wagon. Vayach Banche Beishemesh, the Gemara continues two lines up from the bottom, Vayach Banche Beishemesh, Kiro Ba'aron Mishum Dero Vayach, because they saw the Aron, they started hitting it. What does that mean? So Rav Avov, Rav Elazar, Chanamar, Kotzer Nemishtach Ven Hayu, that they were reaping, they were doing their work, and they bowed to the Aron while they were doing their work, but they didn't even pause their work while they were bowing to the Aron, which is a sign of great disrespect. V'chanamar mili nami amar, they also spoke disrespectfully towards the Aron. So now flipping over to the top of Lamanei Ambebe, so man amrich di'imarta, what they said to the Aron was, who angered you that you got angry? Uman asa alach de'fayas, and who can approach you in order to appease you? And because they spoke or disrespectfully to the Aron, or because they refused to take a break from their work and show respect to the Aron by bowing down and not doing anything else at the time that they bowed down, Vayachbam Shivim Ish V'chamishim Elef Ish, and they smote 70 men and 50,000 men. So what does this mean? So usually you would think it's, if it said 70 and 50,000, would be 50,000 70, but this is a strange language. Vayachbam Shivim Ish, 70 men V'chamishim Elef Ish, and 50,000 men. So Rav Elazar Chanamar Shivim Ish, that it was 70 men who were smitten, Hayu V'chol Echad V'echad Shakol Chamishim Elef, and they were so great that each one of them was the equivalent of 50,000. V'chanamar chamishim elef hayu, others say that it was 50,000 people who were smitten here. V'kol echad v'echad shachol k'shivim shanhedrin, and each of these 50,000 people were equal to the entire sanhedrin shel shivim. They were each equivalent to a full sanhedrin of 70 people. And the basis again for this diuk is the fact that it says chamishim ish shivim ish rather and chamishim elef ish. So it's mashma that it's not simply trying to give a number of people who died, but rather trying to give some sort of comparison, some sort of insight as to the greatness of the people who died, or some limud into the people who died. So it says the Gemara Baiter, Vayiki ki tzadu nosei aron shisha tzadim. It would be that when the people who carry the aron would walk six steps, Vayizbach shor meri, they would slaughter a shor, an ox, and a fatling, and a fat animal. Uchsiv, and it says also, it says Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim, and it also says seven Parim and seven Elim. So was it Shar Umari, or was it a Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim? Samara Papa Bar Shmuel Al Kol Psia Psia Shar Mari. Each step that they took with the Aron, they would shecht a Shar and a fatling. Al Kol Shesh Psios Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. And each set of six Psios, they would slaughter seven oxen and seven rams. Samara Le Rav Chistim came Milesa Kalar Tisrael Bamos. In that case, the entire land of Israel would be filled with bummas. How would they ever get anywhere? If they were literally slaughtering animals with each step, and then when they took six steps, they would slaughter 14 animals, the entire Eretz Yisrael would be filled with bummas and animals. It's impossible. On each set of six steps, they would slaughter an ox and a fatling. And on six orders of six psios, in other words, 36 steps, shiva parim v'shiva elim. Then they would slaughter seven parim and seven elim. I'm not really sure why that's much better, because it still doesn't sound like it was such a great distance, but okay. Siv kidon, it also says, I should point out the Radak says the reason that they slaughtered the karbanos after six psios is because we have a Mesorah that Uzzah walked six steps towards the Urim before he touched it. So Uzzah walked six steps and then he inappropriately touched it and then he died. So sort of as a kapara, six steps that they would walk with the Urim properly, they would bring these karbanos. L'ksiv kidon, u'ksiv nachon. It says regarding the Aron, first it says kidon, then it says nachon. Some Rav Yochanan betchila kidon. At first it was called kidon, and at the end it was called nachon. So what does this mean? So the Marshal explains that at first the Aron was called kidon, which means a spear, because Uzzah was killed on account of the Aron, and afterwards it was called Nachon because subsequently the Aron was carried in a proper manner, unlike Uzzah who carried it in an improper manner. Now the Gemara is going to go back to talking about the Avonim that the Bnei Yisrael were commanded to take off from the Yarden. So Nimtzei Sata Omer Shlosha Mini Avonim Hayu. There were three types of Avonim that Klal Yisrael took. Echad Sheikem Moshe Beretz Moav, one that Moshe erected in Eretz Moav. Shnemar Be'ever Yard the Emeritus Moav Hol Moshe Be'er, that Moshe explained the Torah and wrote the Torah on Avanim. Ulahalanu Omer v'chasavta leim is called the Torah Zos v'asya Be'er Be'er. Be'er, that's how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah and Shivim Lashon on that rock. Ve'echad sheikem Yoshua b'toch ha'yardein, and one that Yoshua erected in the middle of the Yarden, shenemar v'shtayim esrei avanim eikem Yoshua b'toch ha'yardein, that he erected 12 stones in the middle of the Yarden. Ve'echad sheikem b'Gilgal, and one that they erected in Gilgal, shenemar v'shtayim esrei avanim o'ela ashar lakhu, and they erected these 12 avanim. We'll see that the 12 avanim they erected in Gilgal were actually the same Avanim that they had taken from the Yarden, they just transported them. But these three times, these Avanim were erected and the Torah was written on them. The Marsha says, fascinating, that that the reason, the significance of the three sets of stones is like this. We know that there were three foundations on which the Jewish faith rests. There's, number one, there's the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who controls the affairs of the entire world. Number two is the belief in Torah, which is given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And number three is the belief in Schar V'Onesh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to administer Schar V'Onesh. Stones are symbolic of a foundation. They're the building blocks of everything. We know also the center of the world is the Evan Shasiyah, so a stone is symbolic of a foundation. So these three stones symbolize the three different foundations on which the world exists, on which our faith exists. So Moshe Rabbeinu's stone symbolized the Torah, because it was Moshe who heard the Torah directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The stones by our Grizim and our Eval, where the Brachos and Klolos were given, symbolize Schar V'Onesh. And the stones by the Yarden symbolize the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is manig the entire Olam and has the ability to perform great Nisim on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the symbolism, says the Marsha, of these three stones. So let's go a little bit weiter. So Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzvah Kosvu Yisrael Esa Torah. How did Bnei Yisrael write the Torah on the stones? So Rav Yudomer Al Gabi Yavanim Kosvu, they wrote it on the stones. Shneimar V'Kasavta Al Avanim Es Kol Divrei HaTorah Zos, they wrote it directly on the stones. V'Achrakach Sadu Osam Besid, and after that they covered it with limestone. So Amar L'Rav Shimon L'Varecha Heich Lamdu Umos Shaloso Azman Torah. In that case, how did everybody see the Torah written underneath? If they wrote it on the stone and then covered the writing with limestone, then they would obscure the writing. That doesn't make sense. Samarlo Bina Yesera Nazan Lamakadesh Baruch Hu. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them a Bina Yesera, and Vishigru Notrin Shalen Vikilpu as Asid Vesiua. And they sent scribes and they peeled back the Sid, the limestone, and through that they were able to see what was written there. And because of this, their fate was sealed that they were going to Gehenna. Why? Because they should have learned the Torah And they didn't learn it. So there's an interesting Tosfos over here, Val Davar Zeh. So Tosfos asks, well, why do you need this in order to seal the fate of the Akum, that the Akum could have learned Torah now when it was written in 70 languages and they didn't take advantage of learning the Torah? We know that the Midrashim say that before Matan Torah, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, he went, I'll call Uma V'Uma, and he offered them the Torah. So they should already have their fate sealed because they had the opportunity to take the Torah at Matan Torah, and they rejected it then. So Tosfos says no, because over there they had a Pischa Peh to say, well, look, Klal Yisrael didn't willingly take the Torah either. They only took it because Kafaleim Har Kegigas. You were in Kofa the Har Kegigas on top of us. That's why we didn't take the Torah. Had you done that, we would have taken it. But at this time in history, nobody was forcing them to do anything. Yet they didn't take the Torah. That's why they were punished for not. That's why they were punished for not taking the Torah. For Rav Shimon Omer al Kol al Asid Kasvur. Rav Shimon said that they wrote it on the limestone. The Kasvam Lamata, and underneath the limestone they wrote, and underneath where the Torah was written, they wrote Lamana Sharlo Yilmadu Eschem Lasos Kichol. That because you didn't learn this, Halamata Shem Hayu Chosrim Betshuva Yimakablin Osan. That if they would be Chosrim Betshuva, we would accept them. Amarava. Okay, so let's stop over here. We'll pick up over here again with this machlokas, whether the Torah was written under the limestone, over the limestone. We'll pick up from here, God willing, tomorrow.